From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, welcome to this special coverage of California Governor Jerry Brown's 2016 State of the State Address. I'm Beth Ruyak. Sometime in the next few minutes, Governor Brown will take the podium before a joint session of the California Legislature. Also in the audience at the Capitol, California's constitutional officers, members of the California Supreme Court, of course, the governor's wife and senior advisor, Ann Gust Brown, and a number of other special guests. Our Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler is standing by in the assembly chambers. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
In a few ways, the governor makes some personal history today. He has to be counting how many times he's stepped up to do this.
Of course. It will be his 14th State of the State address, although a couple of those also doubled as inaugural addresses, and there were a couple of other inaugural addresses that did not technically count as State of the State addresses. But we are looking at his 14th time that he will tell Californians what the state of their state is from the assembly chambers here in Sacramento.
There are themes that he repeats in every message in this era. Of course, fiscal austerity. But then there's something that distinguishes where we are as a state year to year. What's different about this year?
You know, a couple of things. It just strikes me that the anticipation, the buildup, the buzz leading up to this very moment is less than it was last year. And the obvious reason why is the governor is not putting his hand on the Bible and swearing the oath of office for governor of California. He did that last year. And he does not come into today's speech locked in a major political battle as he did last year with University of California President Janet Napolitano over, you know, tuition increases and state funding for the University of California. So because of that, there does seem to be maybe, you know, it just has the feel of being a little bit different, a little bit less of a grand occasion. And yet any time the governor of California comes before a joint session of the California legislature and the assembly chambers and all the constitutional officers, Supreme Court justices and other elected officials are here. You can't help but just, you know, really enjoy and appreciate the sight.
Add to that a fairly strong approval rating in the state. I believe it's somewhere around 55-56%. But this message is about selling something. So what does he need to sell to lawmakers today?
Well, as we just hear the gavel and the Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins is quieting the members down, and we're getting set to move forward here. You know, the governor is going to once again preach his theme of fiscal discipline. It is something that he has done ever since California voters at Governor Brown's behest approved Proposition 30, the sales and income tax increases, in November of 2012. Since then, he has given three State of the State addresses. I'm pausing now because we are going to hear Jerry Brown at this point has entered the assembly chamber and he is walking down the aisle being escorted by leaders of both parties and other lawmakers as well.
And with that applause today, Ben, I will say that we expect that the lieutenant governor who is running for this job, Gavin Newsom, will be doing the formal introduction today.
In fact, the governor will have three opening acts, Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins, Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon, and then Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. Wouldn't you like to have three opening acts, Beth?
Last year with the inauguration, his wife, Ann Gust Brown, was included in that list. He gave a budget message earlier this month, and we're going to hear some of the introductions in the background, Ben, but just based on the budget message, we can get more indication of where his priorities are for this year.
Of course. And in fact, you could go back and listen, as I was saying before the governor walked into the chambers, you can go back and listen to his previously three State of the State addresses since the November 2012 Proposition 30 taxes were approved. And I've pulled clips from each of the last three speeches for, you know, you can hear the governor's theme of fiscal discipline. Let's listen.
Let us follow the wisdom of Joseph, pay down our debts, and store up reserves against the leaner times that will surely follow. Fiscal discipline is not the enemy of our democracy, but its fundamental predicate. We must build on rock, not sand, so that when the storms come, our house stands.
So that was first from 2013, then 2014, and then a year ago when he took the oath of office for a record fourth term as California governor.
Variations on the theme. And again, introductions are happening at this moment in the assembly chambers of the California State Capitol. A few moments ago, Governor Jerry Brown's wife, Ann Gust Brown, stood to wave to the crowd. There will be a series of comments, the introduction, and then the State of the State message, which He's not usually a long speaker, Ben, so we're expecting, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes?
My guess, you know, 15, 20 minute max, you know, that's typically the length of the speech that Governor Brown gives. And unlike other governors, unlike, you know, a State of the Union address where the president will roll out many major policy proposals where some might be intentionally leaked or shared publicly ahead of time, we've gotten no such indications from the governor's office. My understanding, too, is we're probably not going to hear anything major that is new this year. You know, last year, the governor set very groundbreaking goals to fight climate change, many of which he was able to get through the legislature, one of which, cutting vehicle petroleum use in half in the next 15 years, he was notably unable to get through the legislature. We don't expect to hear anything new like that this year. Instead, we're probably going to hear his greatest hits along the lines of the pieces of tape we just played a few minutes ago. And he'll talk about the unmet challenges and responsibilities facing California, from climate change, of course, to the state's drought and how to get a long-term water supply set up. He's got a big and controversial project, the Delta Tunnels, that would be used to, if they're built, and they'd be very expensive, to ship water from the Delta here in the Sacramento area to Central and Southern California, to farms and to families in the Los Angeles area as well. There's a $60 billion plus backlog that is not funded for road and highway repair, and the governor wants new taxes on gasoline and new vehicle fees as well. Republicans are balking at that, and some moderate Democrats are as well. There's a potential $1 billion hole in the state budget that would be created if the state does not restructure its tax on health insurance plans, managed care organizations. So the governor has a proposal for that. Again, the question is whether he can get Republican support. We expect the governor to talk again about education, about inequality. California is adding jobs at a rate faster than the nation, the national average. And yet, by one alternate measure from the U.S. Census Bureau, the state has the highest poverty rate. Nearly a quarter of Californians live in poverty. And of course, the state budget.
We will talk more about that poverty aspect, and I'll again introduce that you are listening to our Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler, who is in the Assembly Chambers, as Governor Jerry Brown will shortly present his 2016 State of the State message. The things you're saying, Ben, remind me of a sticker that I think he had produced in his first term as governor back in 1975. The words were in Latin. I won't even try to go there, but the meaning, the translation was, do what you're doing. And he has continued to hold that as a centerpiece of his work in government. And again, he just has said, make government do what it's supposed to do. You were hearing introductions in the chamber, and Speaker Tony Atkins is still at the podium. I'd like to just quickly say hello to two guests who will add their reaction and analysis. They're with me in the studio. Robin Swanson, who's a former staffer for Democratic Speaker John Perez and the owner of Swanson Communications. Robin, good to have you here today.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Is there a bullet point expectation that you have of this speech?
I think you're absolutely right. It's probably going to be 15 to 20 minutes. I think that this governor, it's not his first time at the rodeo, so he's going to take the long view. He wants to leave California better than when he started. He's had four chances, and so he has a legacy. I think you're going to see a little bit of legacy in this.
Also with me in the studio, Hector Barajas, who was on staff with Republican Senate Leader Bob Huff. He's continued to work as a political consultant. Welcome. So glad you're with us today.
Glad to be here, Beth.
Republicans have a little range of margin in how they hear this governor. For you, what would a good point and a bad point be in the day?
I think it's going to be about investment into the future, but at the same time, a little bit of fiscal constraint. Over the last 15 years, we've had two bubbles. We've had the dot-com bubble, and we've had the housing bubble. You know, right now, you've got the budget that about $7.9 billion ahead from what we had last year. And so making sure that if the next bubble were to come, that, you know, we're in good financial straits for not just the state itself, but for the people of the state.
Is this the governor who's going to put any new priority or new policy in place for helping various groups in need? And I would include in that immigrants, women and children, those who are dealing with poverty in the state.
I think it's got to be about expanding the middle class, because right now we've seen the two Californias, the have and the have nots. Those within the coastal who are doing quite well with certain sectors with the tech industry, and yet in the inland, the construction industry that are continuing to struggle right now. And as you mentioned earlier, or Ben mentioned earlier, you know, we've got one quarter of our population that is in poverty.
Robin, as you think about governors, and we say this sometimes about our friends, they're there for a season or a reason, and no governor can be everything to all people. Is it possible that this governor was just the one who pulled the state out of the ashes and kind of financially turned it around, and that will be the legacy?
I think he's going to talk about some of that in his speech. I think he's going to talk about turning around the GDP and decreasing unemployment. I think you're going to see a little bit of a parade of victories that he's had. And he, you know, has some successes to work off of. I think he's had more time than most governors. But I also think he has always been sort of the statesman and the adult in the room. So I think we're going to see some of that today. I like to think about, you know, as a former staffer, he's kind of old school. So, you like, the speech that he's going to give today, he doesn't talk from a teleprompter. As a comms director, as a former comms director, that I think throws a lot of people. But he is kind of a throwback.
In fact, Robin, I understand that a text of the speech is in the hands of Ben Adler right now. So let's check back in. Is that true, Ben?
Yes, we just have a paper copy here. The governor is going to warn of the zigzag of spend, cut, spend budgeting. I don't think that will come as any surprise. We were only wondering, you know, what words he might use this year. Will he cite the Pharaoh and Joseph, or will he come up with a new way of saying it? So he's going to open to, you know, looking back at California 41 years ago when he first spoke in the assembly chambers here. And now he's going to say that we live in a world today that is profoundly uncertain. And he goes on to say what happens far away can touch us very directly. He references China, Iraq, Syria. He references very early on in his state the what he calls the unprovoked and brutal attack in San Bernardino. And so he is saying that the state must be prepared and vigilant. And I think he's going to take that frame and advance it, not just looking externally, but looking internally as well. And he'll probably, as I look through the speech, begin to connect that theme of being prepared and vigilant to state finances as well.
We have not yet gotten to the point in the program with the introduction by Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. I will add something we haven't said, Ben, and that is that climate change and the agenda the governor has put him in global gatherings. And as he looks at the state, he's not only concerned about saving the state and the country in a financial way, but literally saving it so it's here for his descendants and all of our descendants.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking through, you know, the topics that he is going to discuss. He's going to start with the budget. He's going to move on to inequality. He is going to talk about how California raised the minimum wage, how there's now a state earned income tax credit, and how in May, California will begin providing full health care coverage to the children of Californians living here illegally. He'll talk about health care and education, infrastructure, water. He'll talk about long-term budget commitments that are not yet met, and he'll close by speaking about climate change. And I think it is noteworthy that this governor, who has made climate change such a focal point of his agenda, he is ending on climate change rather than speaking about it sooner.
Well, climate change is probably one issue that his father, Pat Brown, didn't talk about at the dinner table, though there are many, many others. Water, notably, that his father, in his term, back in 1959 into the 60s, would have discussed at home, that are the same issues that Jerry Brown is dealing with today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's going to reference his father, former Governor Pat Brown, in the opening remarks of his speech, as he speaks about 41 years ago when he first gave a State of the State address in the Assembly chambers. And so, yes, I think you're going to see, and you always have seen, Governor Brown look backwards as well as looking forwards. And that is what makes him a unique governor. He will likely, almost surely, be the last governor to ever serve this long unless the state's term limits law is changed, because he served two terms before the term limits era and now is serving his second term after the term limits era. So he brings a unique perspective to leading California that nobody else really can.
The former Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg said last year in our coverage, the past predicts the future with this governor. I wrote that down, I remember it, and it's so true. And I think my guests in the studio are nodding and smiling with that as well. At the podium right now for the introduction is a man who hopes he will be the next governor. Voters make that decision in 2018. The introduction is coming from Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. And depending on how much he uses this platform, this podium right now, we're going to see the governor step up any moment. And by the paper copy, Ben, does it look like a typical speech for the governor?
Yeah, I think it does. He's going to, not necessarily, again, call for new programs, but I do see him, talking about, let's take road repairs, highway repairs, infrastructure. He is saying that he's proposing that we use $2 billion of our temporary surplus on one-time investments to repair and replace aging structures. So that would appear to be new. But he cites an overall deferred maintenance backlog of $77 billion, and he wants to get new revenue. For that, he says we need an expanded and permanent revenue source. He says ideology and politics stand in the way, but one way or another, the roads must be fixed.
Well, there are millions in the budget, millions more for wildfire battles in the state. As important on the radar as infrastructure is to the governor, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And here we go.
Here's the 2016 State of the State Address from California Governor Jerry Brown.
Thank you. Thank you, friends and fellow citizens. It was 41 years ago that I first spoke in this chamber. At that time, my father was rather surprised to see me make it to the governorship at such a young age. Now I'm kind of surprised that I'm still here, and three more years to go. That is, unless I take my surplus campaign funds and put a ballot initiative on the November ballot to allow fourth-term governors to seek a final fifth term. All right. That's a light note. Back then, California was amazingly dynamic, and it still is. We who live here love and know this land as a unique place, which draws people from every part of the world because of the tolerance, the creativity, and the sheer openness. There's much to be thankful for. And yet, we live today in a world that's profoundly uncertain. What happens far away can touch us very directly. A slowdown in China, or turmoil in Iraq or Syria, or virtually anywhere, can send the stock market reeling and put California jobs and state revenues in jeopardy. And the battles far away sometimes comes right here to our soil, as the unprovoked and brutal attack in San Bernardino so clearly showed us. What occurs daily in so many parts of the world could occur here. That's why we have to be prepared and vigilant. I wish it weren't the case, but it is. Here at the state capitol, we often think we have more control over things than we actually do. But the truth is that global events, markets, and policies set the pace and shape the world we live in. The challenge is to solve today's problems without making those of tomorrow even worse. We face a future that is partly determined and yet in many ways unknown. Our job is to clearly face the facts we do know and prepare for the many unknowns as best we can. In that spirit, you're not going to hear me talk about new programs today. Rather, I'm going to focus on how we pay for the commitments we already have. The budget. Let's start with the budget. What we do know is that since the Second World War, we've experienced 10 recessions, none of them expected or accurately predicted. Economists are unable to pinpoint when a recession will begin or how long it'll last. Historically, California's budgets have been built around forecasts that assume uninterrupted growth. Just looking at the last two recessions, we noticed that ongoing state spending actually accelerated right into the downturn. That's why if you add up the deficits and surpluses between the year 2000 and 2016, you find that total deficits were 7 times as large as the surpluses, resulting in painful and unplanned for cuts. Schools, childcare, courts, social services, and other vital state programs were deeply affected. So too were our universities, which had to reduce classes and double tuition. I don't want to make those mistakes again. According to the economists at the Department of Finance, the next recession, even if it were only of average intensity, would cut our revenues by $55 billion over 3 years. That's why it's imperative to build up the Rainy Day Fund, which was just recently approved by the voters, and invest our temporary surpluses in badly needed infrastructure or in other ways that will not lock in future spending. We must also be realistic about our current tax system. California has a very progressive but volatile income tax that provides 70% of general fund revenues. If we're to minimize the zigzag of spend, cut, spend that this tax system inevitably produces, we must build a very large reserve. We also know that inequality has risen sharply in recent decades. We've seen the disappearance of many middle-class jobs and the growing share of income taken by the top 1%, and even more so by the top 0.1%. In fact, the proportion of income earned by the 1% almost tripled. This contrasts sharply with a virtual stagnation in the wages of so many ordinary Americans. And CEO pay has risen from 22 times the average worker pay to 350 times. Such inequality is reinforced by national regulatory and tax policies and driven by globalization and the relentless influx of cheaper goods and outsourcing of higher paying jobs. Technological change also plays its part through sophisticated software, robotics, and global communication. Of course, this creates jobs, keeps inflation low, and makes available phenomenal amounts of information and undreamed of conveniences. But it also makes for higher pay at the top and a huge number of low-paying service jobs below. In the face of this growing inequality, California has not been passive. We've enacted or expanded many programs to counteract these powerful trends. We raised the minimum wage. We now have the first income tax credit. We strengthened our already strong prevailing wage laws. We made sure that 6.5 million workers will be paid for sick leave. And with respect to helping low-income students, we provide over $2 billion in Cal grants, and we pay the enrollment fees for 65% of community college students. We've added back hundreds of millions of dollars to our CalWORKs, foster care, and child care programs. And in May, we'll start providing full health care coverage to the children of undocumented workers. Most importantly, and this is truly monumental, we've wholeheartedly embraced the Affordable Care Act. As a result, we're now enrolling 13.5 million Californians in Medi-Cal and another 1.5 million in covered California. This is an historic achievement. It will provide health security to so many who would not otherwise afford it. Another area where we are leading the nation is how we provide health services to people in their own homes and in the process give jobs to their providers. Over the past 2 years, we've expanded this in-home supportive services program by serving more recipients, giving current recipients more hours of care, and by giving, for the first time, overtime pay to those workers who provide the services. While the benefits of these programs are enormous, so too are the costs, both now and into the future. In 4 years, total Medi-Cal costs have grown by $23 billion. As the state begins to pay for its share of the millions of new enrollees, the cost of the general fund will also rise. In 2012, the general fund paid $15 billion for Medi-Cal. But by 2019, that number is expected to be $25 billion, an increase of two-thirds. For in-home supportive services, in just 2 years, total spending will jump by $2 billion to $9.2 billion, a 28% increase. As the economy reaches its endpoint and turns downward, it's crucial that we honestly face and plan for these increased costs. In this regard, I ask you, Republicans and Democrats alike, to seriously consider the newly revised MCO financing reform. Other states have taken advantage of this federal program, and California shouldn't shortchange itself. This is not a tax increase, no matter what anyone tells you. The arithmetic is simple. California comes out a clear winner. Please give it your consideration. Do I detect a few Republicans shaking hands there? I hope so. Anyway, applauding. With respect to education, the strong economic recovery and the passage of Proposition 30 has allowed us to increase spending on public schools and community college from a low point of $47.3 billion in 2011 to $71.6 billion this budget year. That's a 51% increase in overall spending, with significant sums allocated under the local control formula to provide for the unique challenges that face low-income students, English learners, and those in foster care. This pattern of educational spending reverses the historic practice of assuming that all students encounter similar circumstances. They do not. The local control formula, now in its fourth year, recognizes this fact with extra funding to enable educators to overcome the barriers that confront non-English-speaking families and those with low and very modest incomes. I'm proud of how California has led the country and the way it is returning control to local school districts. For the last two decades, there's been a national movement to micromanage teachers from afar through increasingly minute and prescriptive state and federal regulations. California's successfully fought that movement and has now changed its overly intrusive, test-heavy state control to a true system of local accountability. We also know that the state has made other commitments, ones that we have yet to fully pay for. Our retirement liabilities for pensions and lifelong health benefits for state and university workers total $220 billion. That's assuming a favorable return of 7.5%. Forever. Each year, the budget must allocate billions to slowly chip away at these obligations. Since 2012, we've taken steps to reduce the future costs of these pensions and put the teacher system back on a solid fiscal footing. Still, we have more to do. To date, we have set aside only a token amount to pay for $72 billion of future retiree health benefits. These liabilities are so massive that it's tempting to ignore them. We can't possibly pay them off in a year or two or even in 10. And there's little satisfaction in the notion of chipping away at an obligation for three decades to pay for something that has already been promised. Yet, it's our moral obligation to do so, particularly before we make new commitments. We have promised our workers these benefits in exchange for careers spent serving the public. If we fail to acknowledge and pay these obligations, will unfairly burden future generations of Californians with these debts. Another long-term obligation we have to face is our deteriorating infrastructure. From state office buildings here in Sacramento to levees and facilities in our parks, universities, prisons, and state hospitals, serious deficiencies abound. In this year's budget, I'm proposing that we use $2 billion of our temporary surplus on one-time investments to repair and replace aging structures. Neglecting what we have built over many years and letting it further deteriorate makes no sense and will just pile up costs in the long run. But that's not all. Our overall state deferred maintenance is staggering, estimated to total $77 billion. Most of that is in our roads, highways, and bridges. Here's our challenge. We have no choice but to maintain our transportation infrastructure. Yet doing so without an expanded and permanent revenue source is impossible. That means at some point, sooner rather than later, we have to bite the bullet and enact new fees and taxes for this purpose. Ideology and politics stand in the way, but one way or another, the roads must be fixed. Now, one of the bright sides in our contentious politics is the joining together of both parties and the people themselves to secure passage of Proposition 1, the water bond. That, together with our California Water Action Plan, establishes a solid program to deal with the drought and the longer-term challenge of using our water wisely. Our goal must be to preserve California's natural beauty and ensure a vibrant economy on our farms, in our cities, and for all the people who live here. There's no magic bullet, but a series of actions must be taken. We have to recharge our aquifers, manage the groundwater, recycle, capture stormwater, build storage and reliable conveyance, improve efficiency everywhere, invest in new technologies, including desalinization, and all the while recognize that there are some limits. Achieving balance between all the conflicting interests is not easy, but I pledge to you that I'll listen and work patiently to achieve results that stand the test of time. Water goes to the heart of what California is and what it has been over centuries. Pitting fish against farmer misses the point and grossly distorts reality. Every one of us and every creature that dwells here form a complex system which must be understood and respected. I would even say reverenced. Besides the immediacy of drought, there's the overarching threat of a warming climate. Incredibly, though last year was the hottest on record, there are still those, particularly in Washington, who are in denial. But even the deniers can't deny that carbon pollution that exists all over the world is causing serious injury and respiratory diseases to people of all ages, but especially the young and the very old. Thankfully, the rest of the world has heard the message. Humankind must change the ways and radically decarbonize the economy. The Paris Climate Agreement was a breakthrough, and California was there, leading the way. Over 100 states, provinces, and regions have now signed on to our Under 2 MOU. The goal is to bring per capita greenhouse gases down to 2 tons per person. That will take decades and vast innovation. But with Senate Bill 350, we're on our way. Finally, we know that in life, disasters happen. Fires, floods, earthquakes, they will occur, and we must prepare to respond. That, too, by the way, requires that we save and maintain a solid reserve. This morning, I've talked a lot about the difficulties that lie ahead. But let's not forget how far we've come. In 2011, the state deficit was $27 billion. Our credit rating was the worst in the nation, and unemployment was 12%. Now, the budget is in surplus. Standard & Poor's has raised our credit rating 3 times. We've paid down accumulated debt, $26 billion worth. We've created, you should applaud it because there might not be too much coming after this. We create a solid rainy day fund to offset the next economic downturn. We've increased funding for schools 51%. We're covering under Medi-Cal 13.5 million people, a 74% increase. We enacted for the first time an earned income tax credit. We raised our minimum wage to $10 an hour, and that's 80% higher than the federal minimum. Two million new jobs have been created, and unemployment has dropped in half. Of course, the global recovery has a lot to do with that, so we should applaud what we can't control, too, because it helps. Yes, it's clear that California is still the great exception. We dare to do what others only dream of. Difficulties remain, and they always will. That is the human condition. And finding the right path forward is formidable. But find it we will, as we have in the past, and as we will again, with courage and confidence. Thank you.
This is live coverage of the 2016 State of the State Address by California Governor Jerry Brown. I'm Beth Ruyak. You're listening to Capital Public Radio. And so if the governor were a college professor, I think he would have been talking to his class in a very practical tone, saying, here's what you need to know. Here's what we've done. Here's our challenge. And then here's all the good stuff we did. And his categories were the budget, inequality, healthcare, education, other commitments, infrastructure, water, and climate change. And really, the lightest moment in this address came at the very beginning with a rather intriguing thought. So let's go back and listen to the very top of the governor's address.
Friends and fellow citizens, it was 41 years ago that I first spoke in this chamber. At that time, my father was rather surprised to see me make it to the governorship at such a young age. Now I'm kind of surprised that I'm still here, and three more years to go. That is, unless I take my surplus campaign funds and put a ballot initiative on the November ballot to allow fourth-term governors to seek a final fifth term.
Many, many points in that speech, but that remark really got a lot of applause. So I'm going to return again to my guests in the studio, Hector Barajas, who was on staff with Republican Senate Leader Bob Huff. I think there were some Republicans applauding.
You know, there's a lot of humor in this speech, a lot of optimism. But the one thing Republicans have seen is, as Robin had said earlier, he has been the adult in the room. And when you've had a lot of freshmen, Democrats and Republicans who've tried to take, you know, the budget into a certain direction, he's always said, look, I've been here before. I understand the booms and busts of the budgeting. Let's have some constraint. And, you know, and he's had to buck his own party many times who've wanted to spend some of the times when, you know, the state has looked like it's finally gotten a little bit surpluses. And he's like, no, rainy day fund. We're going to just do one time spending, as he talked about today. And so, you know, give him credit. You've got, you know, and at the same time, you know, you've got the global scene that is kind of help with the recession. We're now getting out of it. We've got job creation. But at the same time, by not spending that money and putting us into further debt later on, I think we're beginning to see, you know, some of the benefits that have been coming to California.
Do you think his travels around the world and this global discussion about climate change gave him the perspective that made him speak about the things we need to be aware of that are out there in the world that could affect us and we don't even realize they're coming?
Well, not just his travels, but also the time he's probably spent with Mother Teresa and in a seminary where, you know, you look at extreme poverty, you look at individuals in, you know, for his life where he has been very privileged, you know, with his father being the former governor of California. And so being able to live in the governor's mansion to working with individuals or being with individuals who've had nothing in their life and being able to, you know, move around those various worlds, I think has given them a very unique perspective that I would hope that, you know, future governors could have.
He and his wife did move into the governor's mansion at the end of 2015. But Robin Swanson, who is also joining us, a former staffer for Democratic Speaker John Perez, he's not known as a governor that speaks for the poverty in the state, which by some measures is approaching 25%.
Well, I actually think he does. I guess I would disagree with that. I think he takes it all into consideration, but he sort of takes this middle view, right? So he's trying to help as many people as possible. And he's really, by putting the state on the road to recovery, the rising tide does lift all boats. And so I think that's something that he is looking at moving forward. And I think you're absolutely right, your point earlier about him sort of taking the past is the future for him. And I heard that referenced a lot in this speech. So I heard him talking about, infrastructure investments. I heard him talking about, the past is the future. I heard him saying things that will stay on the test of time. So this is a governor who is taking the long view. And that's what I heard about investing in California's future.
Do we think that he listed topics by priority? Is that how you read the speech? He talked about budget first, and then he went to inequality. And that's where I'm getting to. Do you think it's a number two priority for him, Robin?
I do think it's a high priority for him. I mean, he talked about raising the minimum wage, right? So that does help poor people in the state of California because they actually, I think he misspoke. It's 38% higher than the federal minimum wage. So, but that is progress. Then he is moving in the right direction. And I do think that is a priority for him.
Where are cost drivers, though, Hector? Where are the areas that Republicans are going to be careful of money being spent? I think the rainy day fund has sort of calmed into an acceptance place. Water has some bipartisan support. Where's the contention?
I think the contention is over the priorities of California. The governor didn't talk about it, but the governor's still pushing for his high-speed rail program.
He didn't even say that phrase, did he?
No, he did not.
He didn't. But in terms of infrastructure projects, what he did talk about was water. You're absolutely right. The reliable conveyance system. I think it's been an interesting sort of drought, feast or famine for California. So we're in the midst of rains right now, and we can't capture the stormwater. So he wants to have a system in place where we can actually do that with his California water fix.
Where were you going, Hector?
Well, and what I was saying is, you know, you got priorities. And so as Robin said, the priority has to be water. And he didn't talk about high-speed rail. And so do you end up moving, looking at those funds? Is there something else that we can spend it on, whether it's whether above ground, below ground water storage? Because while it's raining now or it's been raining the last couple of days, can we capture that water, reuse that water for the future, not just for food producers, but at the same time, what we're seeing now, especially in many of our urban cities, is the less you're using, the more you're paying for it. And so, you know, that has a cost, especially for those that are in fixed incomes or those that are struggling to get by. The other cost areas where he talked about was Medi-Cal costs. Within the last 4 years, we've seen that increase by about $23 billion. And one of the big ones and a big ticking time bomb that he mentioned and spent some good amount of time is on retirement liability. Where we're facing a liability structure of $220 billion. And when you look at this budget at its peak right now, it's $123 billion. That's almost double the amount, about $100 billion more than what our current budget is at. And so that I think is going to be a question for Republicans is how do we end up paying some of that down? Is there something that we can do in the future so that we don't burden future generations down the road?
We're going to join Capital Public Radio's Ben Adler, who is in the Assembly Chambers, and I believe he might have with him what is an unofficial GOP response, the new Assembly Minority Leader, Chad Mays. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Beth, and yes, Assemblyman Mays is here with me as well. And so, as Assemblyman Mays, first, your big picture reaction to the governor's speech?
You know, it was a good speech. Of course, he highlighted a lot of the things that we've been talking about over the last year. The one thing that really stuck out to me in his speech today was he was talking about the national regulatory climate. Now, we can't forget that in California, we are the most overregulated state in the country. And the impact of those policies have had a real impact on middle-class families. And we talk about income inequality, but in California, we've created policies where people can't find the type of jobs that we want them to. So if we want to increase our standard of living here in California, we've got to start to peel back that overly burdensome regulatory environment.
How do you do that?
Well, I think we got to begin to work here in this. As we know, we've only got 28 Republicans here in the Assembly, but I think we have to begin working with the Democrats. And quite frankly, they're going to have to suck it up. They're going to have to get to a place where they understand that the impact of their policies that they've put in place here in this Capitol are having a real impact on the people they say that they're for. The fact is, middle-class Californians are hurting. Middle-class Californians are struggling. Their energy prices are higher. Housing prices are higher here than they are in any other state in the nation, and their standard of living here has suffered because of those policies, and that wasn't addressed today. And it's not just because of the national regulatory environment. It's in large part because of the regulatory environment that we have here in California.
Ben, would you ask, and I don't know if the Assembly Minority Leader can hear me as well, but...
He can, I believe.
Oh, if you can, Mr. Mays. So the governor said no new policies, but dealing with existing policies in place. With what you just said about strengthening the poor in the state, where should there be some more resource? What's at the top of the priority list to do that if nothing new is created?
Well, it's interesting because what you're addressing as well is as if there needs to be another government program. The problem that we've had here is there's been too much government intervention into the lives of families, into the lives of businesses. We have not done we have not allowed the power of the individual, the power of small businesses to act here. And again, middle class Californians are suffering because of it. I just had a business in my office yesterday, a large business that said, we're expanding in every other state that we're in. We're not expanding in California because our regulatory policies are too burdensome. And I asked them, what's the average pay that you pay your employee? They said $50,000 a year. They're not expanding in California. They're expanding everywhere else. And it's because of the policies that we have here in place. For those who are in the middle class and those who want to be in the middle class, California has become the state where you don't want to be, where you don't want to have.
Just to clarify, though, if we accept that no new programs need to be created, the governor talked a lot about health care, and I think he talks about health care as being a bigger, broader net than ever under the poor in the state. Outside of health care, where else should that net be expanded? Where do you want the money to be spent?
You know, we talk an awful lot. It's not just about spending money. It's about the regulations that we've put in place that have made housing costs double of the national average, that have made energy costs 40% higher for those in homes and 70% for business. It's the regulatory environment that we've created in this state that's made it impossible for middle-class families to be able to thrive. We've got to begin tackling those issues, and then we'll start to see a success here in California for the middle class.
And I understand we have to let you go in a moment, Assemblyman Mays, but one last question. When the governor was speaking about the need for road and highway repairs and finding new revenue sources, gas taxes, vehicle fees, the Republicans did not applaud that portion of the speech, but I did notice that you tweeted, we are ready to have the discussion with Jerry Brown, but we need a true funding overhaul and true reform. Can you talk about what you mean by that?
Yeah, there is no doubt that our roads are in disrepair. The fact is, over the last decade, the last 20 years, we haven't properly been funding transportation. The way that we used to fund transportation was out of the general fund. What we did is we took money, transportation-related revenue, and shifted that to other programs. The first thing we've got to do is take all of that revenue that was coming in that was transportation-related, needs to go and fund transportation. And then secondly, we need to start looking about efficiencies in our delivery system. If you ask anybody in California with the money that we collect, how is it spent? You'll get a wide range of divergent views. So we're ready to have the conversation, but we need real reform when it comes to transportation, the way that we deliver those services.
All right. Assemblyman Mays, Assembly Republican leader, just took over at the start of the year. Thank you so much for joining us on Capitol Public Radio.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
Thank you also, Assembly Member Mays. And he is, of course, a Republican from Yucca Valley, 42nd District. Because we've talked a lot about infrastructure and transportation, let's listen again to some of the words by Governor Jerry Brown in his message today.
Ideology and politics stand in the way, but one way or another, the roads must be fixed.
And what he had said right before that is that sooner or later we have to bite the bullet and enact new fees and taxes for this purpose. Hector, is that going to come during his next 3 years? Is that urgent?
Well, I think if you've driven down our roads, I think it's urgent. But at the same time, I think what he's got to go back to California and say, look, every single time you go to the gasoline station and pump gas in your vehicle, there's a little sticker there that says 58 cents of every gallon of gasoline you're putting in is taxes. And, you know, it breaks it down federal, state, and so forth. Well, where's all that money going to? And so that money's supposed to go back into transportation, but a large portion of that money is being used for other programs. put that money back in transportation. Let's start building some roads. When we start expending that amount of money, then I think he can go back to Republicans and say, okay, there's maybe a couple other things that we've got to focus on, and maybe, you know, let's focus on, you know, X amount of miles of road that we need to repair. But before he does that, I think the Republicans will want to see, make sure that that money that you're putting in the gasoline going in your gas tank is actually being used for its intended purposes.
That is political consultant Hector Barajas, who is in the studio with me. There are Democrats to the left of the governor in their views, and that category includes State Senator Holly Mitchell from Los Angeles. I believe that she is with Ben Adler now at the Capitol. Ben?
Yes, Beth, we are joined by Senator Mitchell. And Senator, you've likely heard this song before from the governor in his past State of the State addresses. How do you respond to his continued call for fiscal discipline, for putting extra money, more than is called for by the state constitution, into the rainy day fund with a potential recession on the horizon?
Thank you very much for the opportunity today. And I have to say, there was at least a new verse in today's song compared to last
yes.
year's. And the new verse today was an acknowledgement around income inequality. I've said repeatedly since I was first elected in 2010 and began to attend these State of the States that I was always struck that he often talked about planes, trains, automobiles, and water, and not people. So at least there was an acknowledgement today of people, which gives me great, great hope, since according to him, we could look at having him not only the next 3 years, but an additional term.
Do you see that as maybe a not so subtle reminder that, he's got a $20 billion plus campaign war chest? He does not want to be viewed as a lame duck?
No, I just think it's indicative of his sense of humor. I would go further to say, I am very hopeful at his, again, first-time acknowledgement of income inequality in the state of California, but it is striking that he continues to take most of the discretionary revenue off the table rather than investing in what many are calling the foundations of shared prosperity. His short list that he went through, state EITC, increased minimum wage, principles that I and many of my Democratic colleagues have stood for, are critical stopgap measures. But if we're talking about creating a long-term structural change to income inequality, it's going to take more.
And when you say EITC, you're referring to the state earned income tax credit that you and the governor and lawmakers passed last year. And I believe Beth wants to jump in.
And Senator Mitchell, hi, it is Beth Ruyak in the Capitol Public Radio studio. In representing the Women's Caucus, were there particular issues or words that you were listening for? And I understand the umbrella of inequality does speak to women and children as well. But aside from that, what else were you listening for?
As a active member of the Women's Caucus, who, again, for a second year in recent history, are making reinvestments in early care and education our top priority. He referenced child care in passing in terms of past actions. There is not significant new investment in this budget, and that continues to concern us. Investment in early care and education is just one of those examples that I talked about in terms of a real investment in shared prosperity. Child care, strengthening our welfare to work program, addressing California's lack of affordable housing. That was one issue that's impacting women at a higher rate than ever in the state of California, the number of homeless women who are trying to survive on the streets with their children. There was no reference to the fact that California houses, to use that term loosely, or is home to one quarter of this nation's homeless. So that's an area of concern that will continue to be an area of concern for the Women's Caucus.
Will the local control formula speak to early education in a sufficient way? And I don't exactly know how that formula breaks down for pre-K or even Head Start programs, but is what he's doing in that arena a significant change?
That is a great, great question, and it does not. With the exception of the few school districts who have part-day preschool on campus, preschool and early care and education is really funded largely outside of Prop 98, which is an issue that many of us in the legislature have brought to bear because it is early care and education. So all of his focus on you know, pushing the decision making and the funding down to the local level, the local school districts, it does not impact early care and education. Many of those dollars come directly from the general fund to the Department of Education and need to be increased. In 2008, since 2008, ECE has lost $1 billion of investment. And as I've told the governor on many previous occasions, kids don't get a do-over. And so as he's paying down debt and bracing for the inevitable next recession, that three-year-old who doesn't get a child care slot, that two-year-old whose working mom doesn't have a safe, high-quality early care and education spot to go to, doesn't get to repeat that if we invest in those programs 3 or 4 years down the road. Kids don't get do-overs.
And Senator Mitchell, there is a proposal in the governor's January budget plan that calls for consolidating three state-funded preschool programs into a $1.5 billion or so block grant. It does not contain, however, any new funding. Instead, what it does is it overhauls the system. It says, similarly to the local control funding formula for K-12 schools, you know, take the money, local school districts, you decide how to best spend it, but make sure that it helps low-income and at-risk four-year-olds. Now, do you believe that there is room to negotiate the reforms there? Does the governor propose? Should the governor propose any extra money to go along with that?
He absolutely must propose extra money, because when we talk about early care and education, when we look at all of the research that really emanated from here in California, thanks to Prop 10 and recognizing that, you know, brain development begins at birth, focusing on 4-year-olds is important. But reaching those children much earlier is critical to their success.
I'm going to, Senator Mitchell, I'm going to say thank you very much for joining us right now. I want to let everyone know that we do have an online archive of California State of the State speeches. It goes back to 2004. You can find it at capradio.org. And our reporters will offer further analysis by annotating the governor's speech. Some final thoughts in the studio, because this is the roadmap for what this year is ahead, although we're in the midst of a long fourth term for the governor. So, Hector Barajas, what do you leave this moment in time with?
From what we heard from the speakers and also the governor, there are a lot of needs here for the state of California. And as we move forward, not just with the budget, but for this fiscal year and moving into the next fiscal year, it's about planning to the future, but making sure that, you know, as the governor said, while we take care of the problems of today, we don't make it worse for tomorrow. And as you know, my mom was a foster care parent, had 53 kids go through the house. And
wow.
One of the great equalizers for all of us was a good education. And so investing in quality K-12 and making sure that there's money there so that our students can get into the CSU system, community college, and to the UCs, that becomes important.
And Robin Swanson, a final thought from you.
Yeah, just that this governor is in it for the long haul. He had a long view. He wants investment in infrastructure. And he has increased education spending by about 50%. With the investments in Prop 98. I also just love that he kind of took the California dreamer and said that we do things that other people only dream of. So I thought that was great.
He did make a note of that. Well, thank you both very much for joining us. And I want to say a quick thank you to my colleague Ben Adler at the State Capitol. Ben?
Good to be with you. And just one final thought. This was very much, other than a couple of jokes here and there, a no-frills speech from a no-frills governor.
That's a good way to sum it up, and what's ringing in my head is one of those light moments when he said, we should applaud what we can't control because it helps. So he's very aware that it's not all about him and what he can do. So thank you very much, Ben. And that brings to a close our coverage of California Governor Jerry Brown's 2016 State of the State Address. My thanks again to Ben Adler, to Hector Barajas, and Robin Swanson. The senior producer of this coverage is Jen Picard. Our producer is James Morrison. Technical Director Mark Jones. We had assistance, so our thanks go out to Linnea Edmire, Alan Ray, Chris Nichols, Ben Bradford, Amy Quinton, Paul Conley, Nick Bruner, Joanne Soria, Evan Matzler, and Matt Pacini. Digital content came from Andrew Nixon. Watch for his photos online from Melody Stone and Marnette Federis. Executive producer of this program is Joe Barr. I'm Beth Ruyak. We have more coverage and the full State of the State Address online at capradio.org. This program is a production of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento.